Okay, welcome to this class on preparation. Are you prepared to teach school? Where do you start? What is the most important thing to do? You feel like an elephant that's been dropped into the ocean. This class hopefully can give you some tips and techniques and strategies to help you keep your head above water. I'd like to ask you a question. Which animal do you think can swim? An elephant or a hippo? Someone say something.
Elephant.
Elephant. Both.
Both? Hippo.
Hippo. Okay. Well, we got all the answers. So one of them's bound to be right. Actually, the elephant can swim and the hippo can't. At least that's what the internet says, so it must be true. Hippos can float if they control their breathing just right. Their bodies are denser, though, than most mammals. And so if you drop them into the ocean, if they start sinking, they face a one-way trip to the bottom. And the only way to get out is to walk along the bottom until they reach shallow water. Elephants, on the other hand, are excellent swimmers. But unfortunately for this illustration, elephants don't have to learn how to swim. If you dropped an elephant into the ocean, he probably wouldn't panic. In fact, humans are one of the few mammals that must be taught to swim. And teaching is also a skill that must be learned. It takes preparation in order to swim. Ideally, a teacher should apprentice underneath an experienced teacher for a year before diving in on his own, but probably most of you didn't have that opportunity. Most of you will be pushed off the deep end of the pool, and hopefully you'll have had some time or will have some time yet to prepare to take this plunge. In this book by Harry Wong that I would highly recommend, The First Days of School, he says the three most important words to a pilot, a chef, and a painter are preparation, preparation, preparation. And the three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. So the importance of preparation, we cannot emphasize this enough. And you might say, well, I just don't have enough time to prepare. Well, preparation, it saves you time. It saves time. Yes, I know it takes time to prepare, but it takes even more time if you don't prepare. If you're confused when you teach a lesson, then your students are definitely going to be confused about it. And you're going to end up having to go back the next day and go over the same lesson again. Whereas if you would have been prepared, they could have got it the first time. You end up in a trap where you're constantly going back over the previous day's lesson, trying to fix mistakes instead of being proactive and foreseeing the mistake and helping the students to avoid it. It promotes a higher standard of teaching. You probably heard the saying, proper prior planning prevents preposterously poor performance. When Ben Carson separated a pair of Siamese twins, were joined at the head from birth, he and his team spent 5 months planning and working through every contingency they could imagine. They spent, and they even worked out where each member of the 70-person team would stand on the operating room floor. They had a certain place for each person to stand, because, you know, 70 people to fit in one room is quite a feat. A 10-page book detailed each step of the process, and they had 5 3-hour dress rehearsals, practice runs, with life-size dolls connected to the head by Velcro. Why did they prepare so much for this operation? What was at stake if they failed? And it was a life or death matter for these babies, and he did it successfully, amazingly. Thankfully, if we fail, it's not quite maybe as much a life or death matter. But if you fail to prepare, you're setting yourself up for failure. When you don't prepare, you're sending a message to your students that school's not really that important, or they're not really that important. So the third reason is it's a good example for your students. And again, I know these handles have lots of words on them and lots of blanks. Don't feel obligated to fill out everything. But they're to help you as best they can. So it's a good example for your students. And we think sometimes, we imagine that we know a lot more than they do, and probably we do. And so we think we can somehow get by if we don't study because we know more than they do about the lesson. Surely we can manage to pull this thing off without preparing for it. Well, the students will figure that out if you aren't prepared. And then if you tell them, you know, I want you to study for this test. I want you to prepare to take this test. And they're like, really? You don't prepare for your lessons. Why should we have to prepare for our tests? And if you consistently come to class and you're prepared to teach, the students will be a lot more forgiving towards you for that maybe one time when you do have to wing it, because you will have to wing it sometimes. But it should not be a habit. It should not be something that they just expect. They have that trust that you're doing your job, and then they will be much more apt to do their job if they know you're doing yours. D, it helps prevent burnout. No one enjoys feeling like a failure. And I shouldn't be talking about burnout. You're fresh, first-year teachers. You're excited about teaching, I hope. But this is something you might face. And if you go into school prepared, you go into your classes prepared, it's going to set you up for success. If you fail to prepare, then you are preparing to fail every time. Preparation is essential to being a successful teacher. And I want you to be successful. We want you to be successful. We want you to be long-term teachers. We don't want you to get burned out the first year. So prepare. All right. The next main point is prepare in prayer. How do we prepare? And prayer is the most important thing we can do in preparing to teach. Do you feel unqualified to teach? Good, because you're not qualified. None of us are qualified to do this great job that we've been given to do. And this feeling of inadequacy should drive us to our knees every day in asking God for help. Asking God for wisdom. I remember doing that many times after a bad day, just praying that God would somehow show me what I can do, what to do. And it was just amazing how so often He did. He answered those prayers. Bruce Wilkinson, in The Seven Laws of the Learner, he says, teachers impact more by their character and their commitment than by their communication. And you're like, what? I thought I'm supposed to be a communicator. I'm supposed to communicate. I'm supposed to teach these children facts and things like that. Isn't that your most important job? To make sure they get good grades, make sure they do well in school, and communicate the lesson to them. That's not what they're going to remember. If you remember in my introduction, I said to my teacher how he took time to talk with us. I really don't remember a lot of the things he taught us. I mean, I know I learned them sometime. I think I did. But I don't remember much about the way he taught. I just remember that he took time for us and he cared about us. And that's what your students are going to remember about you, is that you take time to talk with them. Teaching is a lot more than just passing on facts and figures and giving them an education. It's about showing them good character, showing them good sportsmanship on the ball field. Teachers impact more by their character and their commitment. You will impact the students more by your character and commitment than by what you tell them, what you communicate to them. In 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, Paul says that God said, He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in mine infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. That's when God can use us. If you're going into the school year thinking that I am able to handle this, maybe there's kind of a group of troublemakers there in school, and they've been having problems the year before, and so they got you to come in because they know that you can do it, you can handle it. You think, well, I'm gonna show these boys or girls, I'm gonna show them who's boss. You go into that attitude, it is not going to work. They will beat you. They have a lot more energy and perseverance than you do. They will wear you out every time. The only way we can do it is by leaning on God for strength. When Jehoshaphat was king, a great army came up against them, and here was his plea. O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. And sometime this year, I don't know if it'll be in the first 2 weeks or be after the first 6 months, but sometime you're going to be, I don't know what to do. And that's where God wants you. He wants you to cry out to Him. You don't have to wait till that point to do it, but cry out to God for help. That's when He can use you. In Zechariah, an angel came to him and he was discouraged about finishing the temple. And it says, then he answered and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, I'm sorry, it was in Zechariah, but it was to Zerubbabel. Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. So we don't teach by our might. We don't teach by our power. We don't teach because we're so smart. We teach because we have God's spirit within us. Remember, the Christian school is Christ in a school. Christ in the teacher. God did not create us to always be giving, giving, giving. We're not made like that. We have to have time to refuel. And we can do that by refueling at the feet of Jesus. You can't lead on empty. There's too many leaders today that are trying to lead on empty. And they're failures. You can't lead on empty. You must constantly, and reading good books is another way to refuel as well. Get inspired by some of the books and literature you read. So pray. Pray for your students. It's good to take time in the morning to sit at their desk and pray for them. Pray for some of the problems that they're going through. Pray for good health. Teachers, it's a little bit harder for a teacher to handle it when he's sick than when you can't just stay in bed and that's the end of it. You know, you have to try to find a substitute sometimes, and it can be a challenge if you're sick. So pray for good health. Pray for good health for the students. It can be very hard, difficult too. Half your students are sick, especially if you're about ready to give your Christmas program or Easter program, that can be a tough thing as well. So pray often. All right. Know your expectations. And I'd like to read you a story. How many of y'all read this book, Seven Laws of the Learner? I read out of it? Okay. Here's a story about expectation. I stood like a rock in a rushing stream of preoccupied Bible college students. It was fall registration, organized chaos. I had seen it all before many times, but this time, instead of racing around the gymnasium signing up for classes, I watched as students raced around and signed up for my classes. I watched the students signed up for my classes. It was my first year out of graduate school, and I was just hours away from my debut on the other side of the lectern. Taking a closer look at several registration tables, I noticed that I had been assigned sections 1, 2, and 3 of the course called Bible Study Methods. The remaining 5 sections were taught by others. After walking around for 20 minutes, I left the gym and headed across campus toward my office. A well-seasoned faculty member at the college caught up with me and said, I just can't believe it. You can't believe what? They gave you section 2, didn't they? Well, yes, I guess they did. He shook his head in seeming unbelief. I just can't believe it. You're the new faculty member, first year rookie, and they gave you section 2? He had me perplexed. What's so special about section 2? You mean they didn't tell you at faculty orientation? The truth was, I was the only new faculty member that year, so they didn't have a faculty orientation. I asked him to explain it to me. Section 2 has all the top high school seniors coming out of the freshman class, the honors group, cream of the crop, the most outstanding group of students in the whole college. We stopped outside the faculty offices and he leveled his gaze at me. Bruce, you're not going to believe the difference teaching Section 2. What do you mean, I asked, not knowing whether to feel exhilarated or intimidated. Growing up, I had never been in Section 2, I didn't think. Motivation, like a team of wild horses straining at the reins. Those kids will just pull it out of you. You're going to love every minute of it. Wow, first year teacher, I can't believe the luck. He walked down the sidewalk, shaking his head. I was intrigued, to say the least. The next day, Section 1 filed in, and we had a good hour. Nothing outstanding, just a good give-and-take session with a solid group of young men and women. After break, Section 2 walked in. I couldn't believe it. He was absolutely right. I could feel the electricity in the air. From the ring of the bell, class just flew by as the teacher and students learned at almost warp speed. It was like stepping on a surfboard and riding the crest of the wave the entire hour. At times, the class interest and desire to learn swept over me with such intensity that I had trouble staying on top of it. Everything seemed different. Their questions, their eye contact, their facial expressions, even the way they sat in their chairs. It was incredible. My colleague was right. These students just pulled the best right out of you. Section 3 came in later that day, and then I realized in only a few seconds that they were just like Section 1. Good, but nowhere near the caliber of Section 2. As the semester progressed, I found myself increasingly grateful to God for leading me into the ministry of teaching. I had never felt so challenged and fulfilled, and though I enjoyed all my classes, Section 2 always made my day. As we neared midterms, I found myself walking to a faculty meeting with the academic dean, Dr. Joseph Wong. "Well, Bruce," he said, "you're at the halfway point of your first year. The honeymoon is over by now. How do you enjoy teaching college?"
"It's absolutely terrific. It's better than I ever imagined."
He smiled. "That's great to hear. What's your favorite part of teaching?" Without thinking, I blurted out, "Section 2! He raised his eyebrows and stopped walking in order to listen more intently, I thought. "You have Section 2? Tell me about it." It was the first chance I had to express my delight and gratitude for the opportunity to teach 30 of the keenest students I had ever encountered. I must have sung their praise for a couple minutes as I described the amazing difference between them and the rest of my classes. The dean looked thoughtful as I went on and on about this gifted group of young men and women. When I had finished, he said, "I'm glad you're having so much success, Bruce, but I need to tell you something that may surprise you. There is no honors class this year. We canceled it." My mouth went dry.
"Joe," I said, "you've got to be kidding."
"No, I'm not kidding. Last year we decided it would be better if we spread the top students through all of the class. We thought it would add a little more spark to each of the sections." Dizzy with disbelief, I said,
"Joe, I'll catch you in a few minutes. I need to go back to my office for a moment."
I raced into my office and dialed the registrar, sure that my colleague was just trying to pull something over on this rookie.
"Joyce," I said, "I've got Section 2 of Bible Study Methods, right?"
"That's right, Bruce."
I swallowed hard.
"And Joyce, Section 2 contains all the outstanding students, the top freshmen, right?"
"Well, no, Bruce. We canceled that program last year."
Groaning inwardly, I thanked her and hung up the phone. I couldn't seem to come to grips with what was happening. With reluctance, I reached for my gradebook and opened it. I compared the grades of Section 1 and Section 3 with Section 2. The difference was staggering. I pulled a stack of ungraded papers off my bookshelf. Stacking Sections 1 and 2 and 3 on top of each other, I compared that pile with the stack from Section 2 by itself. Section 2 had more pages than the other two sections combined. I went through the papers one by one, page by page, and the difference was dramatic. The Section 2 students outshone their peers again and again. That day proved to be one of the most dramatic learning experiences of my life. I've never quite gotten over it. For the first time, I realized that what I believed about my students made an incredible difference in what they learned in my class. You see, there was no real difference between Sections 1, 2, and 3. It was the same content, same day of the week, same pool of 18 and 19-year-old students. Not one difference. In fact, never once did I say, "You're Section 2 and your performance should reflect it." Then how could I explain such a dramatic difference in what these students learned? The only difference was in the teacher's expectations. Because my expectations were much higher for Section 2, so was their behavior and learning. I'll never forget sitting back in my chair and saying to myself, "I wonder what would have happened if that faculty member had told me the outstanding students were in Section 3. Fourth main point is know your students. I taught my first 4 years at my home church in Dixon, and then I had 2 years off when I moved to Texas, and then I taught 4 years there, and so I had the advantage of knowing my students ahead of time. So I'm not sure really what it's like to teach students that you don't know. And I know at least half of you are teaching in schools where you don't know the students very well. Jonathan Erb gave me some good tips on that. He taught in some schools where he didn't know the students. So these are some ideas that he has and I think are good ideas. You don't have to do all these things, but I think you can benefit by doing them. Because you want to know their personalities, their interests, so you can teach to that. If a boy is interested in horses, put horses into their math problems. If a girl is interested in something, you know, find out what they're interested in and use it in your class problems. You know, if you have if a horse can run 60 miles an hour, you know, how far can he run in half an hour, or something like that. Use that in your problems. Study their records, their achievement test scores, grades, etc. And you should have a file cabinet somewhere. Here's a file from our file cabinet with a student's work in there, and you can look in there. We have achievement test results from previous years. We have diagnostic tests. We have a permanent record, yearly progress reports. You know, we can study that stuff, and we can find out a little bit about that student. Perhaps we're thinking of, you know, combining grades in science or history. We want to put the fifth and sixth graders together and have them both do sixth grade. What might be wise to check those fifth graders' scores in science from the previous year? Were they doing well at it, or were they, if their average at the end of the year was 67 or 70, it might be a little bit much to skip them up to sixth grade. And obviously, if your school board has plans on how you're supposed to do it, you know, obviously you need to follow what their recommendation is. But perhaps this is up to you to decide, and they just say, well, whatever you think is best. And then, you know, you might want to do some research to find out what would work best. You know, should you do math cards and speed drills with the upper graders? You know, there's a point in Sealy, at least, where they stop doing flashcards and speed drills. But if their grades are bad in math, maybe you should do them at the beginning of the year. Be proactive. You see that the student maybe was struggling in math. Let's start at the beginning of the year with lots of practice to keep them from falling into that ditch again. Be proactive versus waiting until the problem comes up and overwhelms you and then trying to go back and correct and do something about it. It's much easier to start off from the beginning with solutions and help for that student. Obviously, you don't want to just expect that they're going to fail, because if you expect that they'll fail, then they probably will. Have high expectations for them, but know their history and know what they struggle with so that you can try to help them. Start a relationship with them. Send them a postcard. Something you could do here at WFTI. Stop and get a bunch of postcards and just write, hi, this is, and write there, write your name. And I'm here at WFTI studying or learning about teaching and looking forward to this next year of school. Love, and your name. A great idea to establish a connection with them. Make a scrapbook. I know one teacher that did this, made a scrapbook with a picture of the child and then their name and maybe whatever they knew about them, their interests and things like that. In fact, a church calendar, if you can get a hold of a church calendar, again, I'm speaking to teachers who are not teaching at home. If you're not teaching at home, get a church calendar of where you're going, and then you can study the pictures, because you should know their names very soon after you start teaching. Hopefully you don't come in the first day and have to try to figure out their names, but you've obviously written them down on their desk and things like that, hopefully. So, but to being able to connect their names and the faces and get the names right, I know I used to get very annoyed with my dad sometimes. You know, if he would say Mark, Ronald, Josiah, Derek before you finally get my name on the fourth try. And if you can avoid that with your students, it would probably help to avoid distractions and things like that. Show them that you care. In a music camp, Wendell Neisa was my choir director one year, and I just remember this about him, that he, from the very first day, music camp was only 8 days long, but from the very first day, he was memorizing names, and he would connect the name with a fact about how you looked or something. And I think it was by the end of the second day, there was 30 of us, I think. He had all 30 names down pat, being able to recall us all by name. And that was amazing to me. We knew he cared about us. And a student's name is probably one of the most important things to him. Your name is very important. Alan, when I say your name, it makes you think. Roger, good to see you. You want to use your students' names when you're teaching them in math problems. Roger and Alan were cutting up logs one day, and they worked for 5 hours. How many total man hours did they work? Use their names in the math problems. It just makes them interested in it. Use it in diagrams, diagramming sentences. Okay, number five, know your school. Every school is different. The school where you're going to teach is probably different from the one you taught. I mean, from the school that you went to. So know their school culture. School culture. Know what they do and how they do it. Like games, times for assembly, for church. When do they have someone come in for devotions? When do you have singing practice? Recess time. What is their attitude toward learning? What areas need some work, and work with the culture. Don't try to come in and change everything the first year. That's not really your place to do it. Work the system the way they do things, and then maybe after you taught 5 years, then you can start implementing some good changes. Maybe not even that long, but find out how they do. Every school has a culture, and we need to use that to our advantage and work with it, not try to fight against it. Know the school structure. Is it church-sponsored or is it patron-sponsored? And probably most of your schools that you're teaching are going to be church-sponsored, where the church is primarily in charge of it, but there are some schools that are patron-sponsored. And there's a big difference, because when the patrons are sponsoring the school, then they're much more involved in the deciding the rules, and you're more responsible to them than you would be in a church-sponsored school. Who's the principal? Who's the chairman? Are you supposed to be the principal? Know what your responsibilities are in the school. What is the structure? Who are you supposed to talk to when you have problems? Or who's the head teacher? Things like that. Who's going to be in charge of recess? Maybe this is just a school where there's only girls, so have it kind of figured out who's going to take charge on which days, or who's going to ring the bell for recess and things like that. Know your school structure. Number five, know your curriculum. This is my favorite one. Find the book order. I'm a book person, as you can see. I love reading. I love books. Jonah likes objects, obviously. And we have different strengths. So when I go into a classroom at the beginning of the year, I look for the book order. There should be a stack of boxes somewhere. And I open them up and get out all the books, the wonderful books, and start looking through them and organizing them. You can take figure out what each student is supposed to do that year and stack their work on a table. Maybe write their names on the chalkboard and stack each student's work in one place. Make sure it's all there, because if there's something missing, perhaps there was a mistake made in the school order, and if there's something missing, you can order that right away, and it can come before school starts if you do that right away. That's the most important thing. The first thing you should do, I think, when you step into your classroom is organize the books. Make sure they're all there, and then you have time to order more if there's something missed. Then you have skill subjects versus content subjects. So the skill subjects are like math, reading, language arts. All the subjects are important, but those are the most important. Spend more time planning and preparing to teach those than you do with the science and history and Bible. Those are important as well, but first-year teachers, you only have so much time. So prioritize what's important. Make sure you cover the skill subjects well. B, study the textbooks. You should have textbooks in your classroom. Here we have English 5th Grade Teacher's Guide, and also the Christian Life Teacher's Guide. There's the spiral approach versus the chapter approach. So like some curriculums, it's spiral. You start here and you learn something, and then you go there and learn something, but then you come back here and review that, learn something more, and you keep going higher and higher, but you're constantly going back to what you've already learned, building off of what you already learned. This type of approach is probably 70% review and 30% new material. It's a spiral approach. You're constantly reviewing, but you're constantly learning new material as well, whereas the chapter approach is we learn about verbs for a chapter, learn about verbs, and then we go into something else. Learn about nouns, we go into something else. It starts off with something easy with nouns, maybe just very simple basic nouns, and then perhaps at the end of the chapter you're getting into noun clauses if you're doing upper graders. But it's like this. Both ways can work wonderfully, but know what you're doing. This one has 70% new material and 30% review. So know which one you're teaching, and you need to vary your teaching to fit that method of teaching. If you're using this approach, you'll probably need to do more review on your own than you do with this approach. Ask the previous teacher how they taught. I heard someone saying, talk with the previous teachers. They can give you so much good help for the year. Just talk with them. Ask them if you have questions. Read the teacher's guide. There's so much information in here. I remember one teacher talking with her, and I was asking her about the spelling test, I believe, and I found out she was just trying to, when a spelling test would come along, she would pick out the words, whatever, and go through and do every other one or something like that. And I told her, well, in the back of the teacher's guide, it has the spelling test there. They're just right there. It even has sentences to read with the spelling words. So the resource is there. Oftentimes we can miss things in there. The beginning of the teacher's guide, gives you tips on how to teach it, how to do the creative writing classes, what the symbols mean. There's lots of stuff in the teacher's guide that you can use if you just. Another thing with spelling tests, make sure you can pronounce the words correctly. That was a big thing for me. I pronounced a lot of words wrong, and you know, students can they laugh at you about that, and you'll have to probably get used to that as well. But if you can go through the ahead of time and write in the phonetic spelling for it, phonetic pronunciation, then you'll know how to pronounce it when you get to it in the spelling test. Okay, the seventh thing is know your schedule. Teaching is a very demanding life. It is fulfilling, but you need to carefully budget your time. There's only so much time to go around. Make sure you watch your personal life. Get to bed on time. Be careful with other commitments. It's so easy to have lots of other things that you commit to doing. You know, you have youth group, and you have singing, and you have the hog hunting you want to do, and things like that. Be careful with that stuff, because a teacher that comes into school the next day when he's only got 3 hours of sleep is probably not going to be the most effective teacher. Be careful with your commitments. Know your school life. And again, this is back to the thing of get a copy of last year's schedule. Is there a schedule? There might be a schedule laminated on the teacher's desk that shows that recess time is this time, and we have math class then, and we have language arts class, and it should also show not only what you do in one day, but like how often per week you do the subject. So if you can't find the teacher's the weekly schedule, go ask the previous teacher for it. Find one. It can save you hours of time. I remember sitting down the first year, the teacher that taught before me when I taught first, she was over in Africa, and so I had no way of getting a hold of her. I had to spend a lot of time coming up with a schedule, and it would have probably saved me. Maybe there would have been a better way to do it. I don't know, but find the schedule if you can. And if it worked last year, it'd be great to use this year. If you have time to remake it, then that's fine. But it would be a time saver if you could use the one that they had previously. Again, it tells you how often you need per week you need to do the subjects. Science, do you need to do it twice a week or three times a week? How often you need to do it to get it done. Perhaps maybe they just go through half of the book a year in science or history. So find out those things so that you can know how to do things. Find the school calendar. Here's our school calendar for the coming year. When is back to school night? When is the Christmas program or Easter program, whatever you're giving? Achievement tests, when are they doing those? Lots of different things. If you can get a school calendar, ask the school board for one, or if they don't have one, I guess you can make one yourself. Just make sure you get their approval. Plan the games and recess times. Plan a list of school supplies for the students. That's another option you could have, is get a paper with all the supplies the students need to bring to school. Prepare your records. You have your grade book. Should have a grade book somewhere with putting their names in, a place for each subject, a place for their grades. You know, we have all these grades. We have to put in, make sure you have a place for them to go. Especially if you're teaching rod and staff and you have daily grades, you need to make sure you have a grade book. Probably not as important for Christian life. The file cabinet, we talked about that. Make sure you have a file cabinet and you look in there and see if the stuff is organized. See if you have the stuff in there that you need. And make sure it's ready for the year. Another option is the student permanent record. That should be in the file cabinet as well. If there's not, you can make one yourself. But one thing that I learned in my teaching is when you get that book order, if you can go through those books with Christian Light anyway and tear out those quizzes and tests at the beginning of the year, you have 10 books, tear them all out and file them in a file cabinet in an organized way with quizzes and tests just all in the order that you're going to use them, it saves a lot of time throughout the year. Instead of each time you get a book out having to tear those quizzes out and file them, they're all torn out at the beginning of the year. You could even write all their names on them, which I don't think I would recommend, because just in case they leave or something, and you have all these books with names that don't get used, I guess you could white them out and reuse them. But at least tear the quizzes and tests out, organize them so that they're ready to go throughout the year. So much, the beginning of the year before school, you have lots of time. After you start teaching, then there's zero time to do extra stuff, it seems like. So the more you can do ahead of time, the better off you are. I have achievement tests there as well. You know, if you're doing achievement tests and if they've been ordered already. If they've not been ordered, make sure you order them, because that can be a thing that if you don't order them in time, then they might not get there in time. Prepare your classroom. And again, I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on this. There's a quote in the first days of school. And again, I think I failed in my preparation here because this is a different... I meant to bring my book, and this one is a little bit different. It says, you don't need a learning center on the first day of school. Don't waste time trying to finalize one now. Wait a week or so after the students have the classroom rules and procedures and routines down pat before you allow them to work at the learning center. And also, it says, a few bare bulletin boards, shelves, and flower pots won't bother anyone. So don't spend so much time with your classroom preparation. It's more important to spend time with procedures and deciding how you're going to do things than having the perfect Winnie the Pooh classroom or whatever it might be, Dr. Seuss. That's not quite as important as procedures and books and things like that. It's much better to start off with a clear plan of what you're going to be doing versus a beautifully decorated classroom, although that's the first thing people see, and so that's the thing we think is important. If you do, again, make it meaningful, make it educational, make it stimulating, make it scriptural, make it meaningful. It should be things that actually mean something. Maybe Dr. Seuss, is there something meaningful in that? Well, I don't know. I'm not saying it's wrong, but think about that when you decorate your classroom. Make it educational. There should be things on the walls that teach, like math facts or like the scale. Just like here, we have the hand signs for the solfege. It's educational. Make it stimulating. It should stimulate them to think. For example, maybe have the Serenity Prayer. God, give me the strength to accept the things, so on. I love that there's a lot of good stimulating posters that you can buy that make you think. And, of course, lastly but not leastly, make it scriptural. Someone should know when they walk in your classroom, this is a Christian room. It's not. There should be Bible verses somewhere. Hopefully you have your Bible memory chart somewhere that you can rely on. Okay, prepare to teach the first day. What you do on the first days of school will determine your success or failure for the rest of the school year. And again, this is in First Days of School by Wong. What you do on the first days of school will determine your success or failure for the rest of the school year. It's just something about it. When the students come to that classroom and they see you for the first time, those first few days are crucial to setting up what they think about you and the way you teach. And it also sets you up on how you're doing things. Maybe you think, I'm getting ahead of myself. Show them this is where there's order and purpose and learning is exciting. Show them that the first day so that they're excited about school. Write out a welcome speech. Now, maybe you feel fairly confident about school, but somehow when you get up front, and all the students are looking at you, and you're the one that's supposed to be in charge, things just tend to go blank, and things disappear that you thought you wanted to say. So maybe write out a welcome speech, word for word, just so that you can start off with an organized, coherent speech. Establish procedures and routines from the very beginning. And I'm sure Jaden will give us more details on this tomorrow. I'm excited about what he has to share. Maybe you think, well, you know, I just give the students grace the first week, and just let them... It might take some time to get them used to going back to school again, so we'll let them talk without raising their hand and maybe go out for drinks and restroom without permission or whatever your procedures are, and we'll just tighten down after the first week. That's not a good idea. Go ahead and start with establishing procedures and routines from the very beginning. Now, you don't have to, if they talk, speak up, go to the office. You know, you don't have to do that the first time they make a mistake. But correct them. Say something. Let them know this is not the way we do things in this classroom. In this classroom, you need to raise your hand before you talk. And just let them, in a nice way, allow as much as possible, use natural consequences for things. If they go after recess, when you say it's time for recess, if they jump up and run for the door, you don't have to spank them for that. Just come on back here, try that again. Try walking instead of running, or whatever it might be. Just drill in them procedures and routine. I'm probably getting to Jaden's topic tomorrow, but your teacher planner. Make sure you have your teacher planner ready. Plan out, and I think you should plan out the first 2 weeks of school at least. I always try to plan out the first 2 weeks of school. You know, write down the lessons you'll be doing for the first 2 weeks. And you could write out some of the subjects. I wrote down what we were actually teaching, others I didn't. But plan out the first 2 weeks, how often you're going to do math. Maybe you want to do math, depending how you do it. If you start every subject and do the first lesson the first day and one lesson per day, then the fifth day you have four quizzes in all your subjects, four quizzes on the same day. So you want to kind of, if you plan it out 2 weeks, you can kind of see how things are going to work so you don't have a bunch of quizzes on the same day or you don't have tests on Monday, things like that. Plan out your schedule ahead of time. And it just, students especially, the first, when they come into school, they're excited about school and they get a lot of work done the first day. If you can have a lot of stuff there ready for them to do, then you can keep them busy and you don't have to worry about them getting it done at lunch and scrambling for something to do. Have plenty of stuff planned. It's amazing how much work they can get done that first week of school. So make sure you plan enough work. Be flexible, though. You always need to remember to, be able to change if you need to. Science supplies. This is something you can do at the beginning of the year. Look through the science textbook and decide which experiments you're going to do and then make a list of the things you'll need and order them all at the beginning of the year, and then whenever you're ready to do that experiment, then you have those things ready. You don't have to make a 10 o'clock trip to Walmart to get some science supplies. It can save you lots of time. Bible memory. I use my Bible program, my computer, to copy verses onto a blank document. And then I would divide them into sections, you know, four verses per section. If there's 34 weeks in school, maybe you want to have 30 sections of Bible memory. So if you can plan that ahead of time. In fact, you can do that even before you go to your school that you're teaching. You can do that now from here. Decide what you're going to have for Bible memory and then go ahead and divide it up into sections and have it ready. Have those papers printed off or whatever you're going to do for them to have so they can study their Bible memory. And allow some time. There's some weeks when you won't be able to have Bible memory and you want to have review some weeks as well. What about your Christmas or Easter program, letter E? Especially if you plan on singing a difficult song, it helps tremendously to start practicing right away. One year we sang Let This Mind Be In You by Lyle Stutzman. It's a pretty difficult song, but we started practicing the first week of school, even though it was a Christmas program, and it was amazing how well it went. We didn't sing it perfectly, but it was fun. They loved it. You can start practicing that right away if you have that planned out. Don't wait till just a week or two before the program, but plan your program. Motivational projects. Make sure you do a team effort, team reward. Don't just do whoever gets 100% gets a piece of candy, because there's some students maybe that can't do as well with that. So if you can have a team effort, divide them into teams and have each team working, maybe find out their grade average from the previous year, and every time they get a score better than their grade average, have some type of reward or point that they can get. And again, you don't want to do this all the time, but it can be something to help lighten things up in the middle of the year. Make sure each student is motivated to improve. Then you have extracurricular ideas like science fair, special days, pest hunt. And there's nothing wrong with coming up with these in the middle of the year, but so often it seems like we're so overwhelmed with other things, our brains just can't think of things like that to do during the year to keep things lively and keep things interesting. But plan those ahead of time. You don't have to worry about it. Okay, daily lesson preparation. Law 1 in the 7 Laws of Teaching says the teacher must know that which he would teach. And again, I said this before, but the very ignorance of his pupils may tempt the teacher to neglect careful preparation and study. He may think that in any event he will know much more of the lesson than the pupils can, and imagine that he will find something to say about it, or that the ignorance will pass unnoticed, a sad mistake and one that often costs dearly. The cheat is almost sure to be discovered, and from that time the teacher standing with the class is gone. So make sure you have daily lesson preparation. And again, study the objectives. So daily lesson preparation, study the objectives. They're at the beginning of the lesson, and they basically just say what we're learning. In this lesson, we're learning, learn to study word simile. Learn that similes are figures of speech that compare unlike things. So if you know that's what you're teaching, then you can focus on that. Plan the review. And with some curriculum that's mostly done for you, with Ron's staff, you probably have to do more of it yourself. Plan how you're going to do it. Are you going to do the review at the beginning, or are you going to do it at the end? How will you do it? Plan that out. Do it the day before. So often things can come up in the morning that you're busy with and you don't have time. And so, yeah, it's just safer schedule-wise to do it the day before. You can bring things from home that you need if they're not at school, or make sure they're available at school. It also gives time for it to soak in. If you study the evening before, you can be thinking about it, and it can be fermenting in your mind during the evening, and you're ready for it the next day. Do a few problems yourself. We might look at something and think, oh yeah, I know how to do this. And then we come to the class table, and we mess around a few times, and we have to try a couple times to get it right. That's not really a good example for our students. Do a few problems yourself. Study the lesson until you are excited. It's more important to prepare for the next day's lessons than to check today's lessons. That's something that's kind of hard for me to get grasp. You know, it's really more important to study for the next day's lessons than to do the checking. But it is. If you're overwhelmed with checking, you can't get it all done. Maybe you need to talk to the school board. You know, you could spend hours preparing. You could spend unlimited amount of time preparing. But we don't usually have that much time. So a good rule is study until you're excited about it. So in conclusion, teaching is a skill that requires a lot of effort, planning, and preparation. Would you jump into 10 feet of water without any flotation device? If you've never swum before, probably not. Please don't jump into the classroom without preparing. But just like swimming, you can't learn how just by listening to topics. There comes a time when you have to jump in. Even elephants can't or don't always keep their head above water. They have a built-in snorkel, which is their trunk. Prayer is our underwater breathing apparatus. Even when we are in over our heads, we can still survive if we keep a strong connection to our Heavenly Father. And maybe you will discover, as I have, that teaching, like swimming underwater, can actually be a thrilling experience. So the takeaway, the three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. The three most important words to a teacher are
preparation.
So are you going to be proactive or reactive? Good news is you get to choose. Thank you.